title. They're speaking, but it's all foreign language,
so I really won't kind of have the volume that far up.
Occasionally I might pause it just because some of the points, the words are up for a very short period of time, just so you get a chance to kind of read what it's saying. I missed that. So really quick here, right? You have them basically carrying the grapes, and these rooftops were all flats, and they had holes where they would drop the grapes down in to where the wine press and the whole winemaking kind of equipment was. But Commentaria, which is actually still made today in Cyprus, basically the grapes on the rooftop for 8 to 10 days, where the sun would kind of dry them, and their complexities within the grape would really become very saturated, and then they would begin the pressing and stuff, and the juices would be really sweet. Now this is a little further along in the advancement. During some of the earlier periods within the Egyptian cultures, they would have baskets, large baskets, that they would put the second mashings within, and they would have kind of like strings attached to them, and they would kind of like twist the baskets taut until you would get like what would be called like the second squeezing, where they would then extract the rest of the juices that they could out of that. Now, really quick, what you saw there was you saw basically they're going through three, squeezings from what would have been the original grape clusters. And what would happen is a lot of times, even though they kind of don't specify it here, you'd have your first squeezings, and those would go into a vat for fermentation. And then you would have where they scooped them up and put them in and then squeezed out again. And those would be your second squeezings, and those would go into a vat, sometimes maybe with other stuff. And that would be a fermentation. And then a lot of times they would kind of just beat it and try to get whatever left. They take that and the seeds and the skins and everything, and they put that all in a that ferment. And it would be your different qualities, and that determine, well, your position within class and culture would determine which quality of wine a lot of times you got, because the orders from like the rulers a lot of times would specify how much within their culture people were given quantities of wine on a daily basis. And it was also not only quality but quantity of what you would be given. It's actually fairly quick. I mean, you go in and you stomp it out over, you know, a period of a few hours till you really get it all just, you know, mashed as much as possible, and then the time for it to drain. And then it would just be that collection process back in and squeezing again. I would say, you know, over a period of a couple of days, it'd be fairly quick. Yeah.
Do you have any knowledge of police for doing the foodstuff and
part of
it? Did they like
play
music
or
anything
like that? Yes. It was actually very customary from the very beginning. It's recorded, you know, through a lot of the earlier civilizations, the Hittites and, you know, Canaanites and Assyrians, and then in, you know, the Egyptian cultures, and then into both the Greek and the Roman cultures. When they did that, it was mostly accompanied with music. It was, in a sense, kind of like with military in a form of a cadence, where you'd have multiple people in large vats. A lot of times, it was very slippery because the grapes and stuff were very slimy and stuff, and they would have things suspended from the ceilings where they would be able to hold on to them while they kind of did this, and they would kind of all do in unison while there'd be a few people over just playing music for them.
But another question is not necessarily.
No, go ahead. You know, there's mixed stuff on that. Mostly, it was males that were involved with this, but then in some cultures, the females were kind of involved, but a lot of times more within the brewing and stuff. So I would suspect that, you know, you definitely had women that were involved with the mashing as well. So what they're speaking to here really quick, it's something that they did quite frequently, and I'll speak to more of some of the uses of the leftover grape stuff, but the must, or kind of what was the leftover after all the juices were extracted, a lot of times were then taken and boiled down and then strained, and then what was left, they would kind of add flour and or other sweeteners, and they would make different like snacks with them, sweet snacks. Now, sometimes they would have been buried, sometimes they would have been in, you know, cellars. I'll take all you got. All right. So now that we've kind of had an opportunity to kind of see a little bit of, you know, my intent of the video was to kind of just give you a picture of what it would have been like. Noah started to, and his sons and his sons' sons really started to develop all of this stuff. If some of what you saw in Georgia there is literally not far from actually way it would have been during those times. So really quick, we start with Noah, right? And Noah, we get the planting and cultivating of the wines and vineyards. And then from there, as you know, the family starts to grow and expand, you start to see the societies grow, and they start to share knowledge and their skills as their process, you know, grows from where they started and down and out. They kind of went west and south from their origins. And that's where the winemaking and viticulture expanded. And we see the trade routes start to develop as well within a lot of the key positions of where these vineyards are. And so what we have here is like the beginning story here is we have Noah to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph is kind of where, you know, everything kind of really takes off, and you have I'll get to it in just a second here, but so from the birth of vine and wine to a fully developed world in which wine was at the center, and you have an Egyptian culture that really grew and demanded, had a high demand for wine. And what this really did was it developed to a large part the exports from these original regions of where wine was really cultivated and developed. And so what you have, and these numbers are rough, but they're based off of, you know, after a lot of the reading that I've done, I'm pretty convinced that the Bible does a very good job in providing its own genealogy back to flood and creation if you follow all of the bloodlines. And so what you see is you see from creation to the flood time at about 1650 years. And I only say that because when you take that into the context of the world we live in, and you go back 1650 years, so much was done by man and developed and stuff. Now, there isn't really any information that's given prior to the flood with wine or winemaking or anything, but it's definitely of my belief that some of the skill sets and or knowledge was probably already developed or acquired prior to the flood. And definitely, along with everything else that was brought onto the ark, Noah would have definitely brought, possibly cultivated, but or wild, clippings of varietals of, you know, where he would have been prior to the flood. And then in addition to that, you know, you also have the long-term effects of winemaking, and that is the ability for its storage. Now, I want to believe that in 1650 years, mankind definitely probably acquired a skill set to be able to take clay and make some sort of pottery. He was able to build an ark. Yeah.
Jordan makes an interesting point that theologically speaking, there was covenantal advance from Adam to Noah.
Mm.
Because God planted the garden that Adam was in, but Noah himself planted the vineyard that he enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for us to grasp because we have a tendency to think that, well, after the fall, everything's going to be bad. Everything's going to always be negative.
Right.
But in fact, there was progression in covenant, even in the midst of sin. Noah made a tremendous advance.
Yes.
The vineyard, and also, not to do with wine, but he had more responsibility in terms of the exercise of capital punishment for murder. That wasn't a right that Adam had.
Mm. Yes.
Or prior to the fall. But it was a judicial right handed over to Noah.
Interesting. So just a few comments with that, you know, that there would have been some skill sets. And if not, you know, what we see is we see from Noah's planting and cultivating as kind of laid out in Genesis to Joseph's time, we see a period of approximately 750 years. So again, and the reason I kind of stop at Joseph briefly with all of this is during Joseph's time, as we know, he was basically in the prime of what would have been the Egyptian civilization. And so that sometimes is, aside from moving into the newer Greek and Roman time frame, was pretty much the pinnacle of winemaking being conducted with that time frame of mankind. So, you know, and we see within our own time frame, just within like 1700 to 1800s till now, the huge advancements within wine development, making, and spreading throughout all of the world. So it definitely goes with, you know, without any, it's just definitely, you know, we have the proof just within our own world and our own short history that 750 years is such a long time to be able to develop that stuff. So here we have a quick map, and basically this map is kind of giving you the core picture of what the, you know, the early kingdoms and societies would have been. Now obviously we look in here where we have Mount Ararat, and then we have again the Caucasus Mountains and then the Zagros Mountains, and it's within this area, you have, this would be Georgia and Turkey, it's within this area where a lot of the initial findings, and again this is based off of archaeological findings, and although the dating that they use can be argued as flawed, it definitely puts it at as the oldest of everything that has been discovered up till now within these areas. The only other area, and I'll show you on another map, is actually further east, close to the Yellow Sea, I think it is, basically the coastline off of like China and Japan. And so Lower Egypt, we've got Canaan, the Hittite kingdom, the Assyrians, Persia, basically everything that would have and led through like the time of Abraham and Isaac and Joseph. So this is a quick saying from an undescribed Australian winemaker, and I thought it's great as we kind of just start this. And so basically it's his opinion on winemaking, and he says it's simple really. You start with rich fertile soil. Into this you plant wine cuttings of noble pedigree. Nature adds water and sunlight. The vines bear fruit. The fruit is picked, crushed, fermented, and aged, and then you drink it. And basically, I kind of put that in there as a as again, just that basic of, you know, as we look with Noah, he definitely would have brought them with him, because as we know, the flood destroyed everything, all living things on earth. So he would have definitely brought clippings with him. And as he went out and he planted, very simple, he went out, kind of found some fertile soil. Obviously, they definitely would have been able to grow things. They knew how to grow things. Being able to search for and find good soil and then be able to plant and let nature and God's word do the rest. It takes vines 2 or more years to produce fruit. Compared to the few months it takes cereal crop like barley to reach maturity from seed, grapevines could have been cultivated only by a settled society, as kind of spoken the last couple of weeks, not by a nomadic one. Beyond that, growing vines that produce regular and plentiful crops of grape was very labor-intensive and demanded a year-round care. What that points to is after the flood is where we see society really starting to settle down, take up its roots, grow, and just become very civilized. Wine was integral to new diets and culinary processes that emerged during this period. It was at this time that staples such as bread and beer began to be produced, and that humans began to process food by heating, soaking, fermenting, and seasoning them. Around this time, Noah or descendants would have also developed the ideal means of conserving wine, as we spoke of with the pottery vessels. And one of the other things I thought was very important within the video that we watched was those pottery vessels that we saw that they made. Basically, there are several vessels that are in some of the museums within Georgia that date back to as far back as some of the initial findings from pottery, with their technologies where they scrape residue out of the pottery. They were able to determine based off of molecular compositions and stuff that you had certain key elements that grapes have, tartaric acid, different yeast and stuff like that. And so that Quevri basically puts us back to that very time that probably, in a sense, I feel, was literally how Noah and his descendants ultimately created and decided or figured out of how they would actually do the fermentation. They probably buried them. You know, having that large quantity, they may not have been that big, but the clay from most of these pottery that they find, both shards and complete things, all of these digs that they've done all across this region, they all match the clay soil compounds that of those regions. So it definitely would have been pulled from there. You know, this is key because this really starts to create this economies, you know, of scale. You had people that had to start to be able to manufacture this stuff. You had people then that had to start to tend and take care of these vineyards as they started to grow. And as the society started to have more and more demand for this stuff, it would have driven more and more work for creating and making this stuff. All right, I just want to read you this. It is late October in the steep sided valley. A mist hides the slow winding of the Rioni, gorged with the noisy waters of the Caucasian streams. At intervals of tropical summer, fogs have invaded the coastline. The afternoon days softening the air in a tree where the streams run, and shading the rambling grapevines. Grapevines are
stream beds, thick as dragons climbing forest trees, flinging themselves over pergolas, through orchards, and again the walls of every wooden balconied farmhouse. Shaded by laurels among the vines beside the house, each farmer keeps his marani, his wine cellar. It is a mystery. It is a mystery of barrels. A series of little molehills in a well-trodden earth is the only clue. The family brings the grapes here in long conical baskets. We saw those when she went out, when they were going to where the vines were going up the trees. Emptied them into a hollowed out log. That hollowed out log was what we saw when she went to the elderly man who had made some wine for Stalin, his father, and you saw that big hollowed out tree. It's exactly what it was. The farmer takes a box carrying hot water from a bucket, then slowly and deliberately punches until his feet feel no more resistance. The molehills, his kveris, bury laurel shaded ground. With a hoe, chipping at the molehill until it reveals a solid plug of into the kveri, freshly the mop made ladles and the crushed grapes the brim. They will ferment of the earth. In the spring, he will ladle the wine out again, poured out quivering, begins behind. Then, molehill, cool in the shaded Morani, it will keep almost indefinitely. When the time comes, no need to see. The heady perfume leaps from the freshly opened well. The neighbors come, shallow pots, streaks would recognize. And a long, stately, and full of toastings and old epic songs. So here's another map, and basically this kind of gives you, you see the highlighted, most of our modern day archaeological digs have been found. And what you see is most of it is central within here. Down into where Egypt and the Egyptian empires would have been, all into here, and then you see your roots that start to move out west, like I said, out here to the Yellow Sea, Japan. And actually, interesting enough, although this wasn't of when they did the molecular studies on it, it didn't have actual grape residues in it, but it was actually more of just a fermented beverage with, like, say, barley and rice and things of those nature. And then we see moving east into Europe. And ultimately, you see a civilization obviously moved out this way. We definitely see that there would have been the abilities to move further north and then obviously possibly cross through, I think it's the Balkans, into Alaska and then move down into, North America and South America. So, one of the authors that I used, that I've been using for reference writes this. Noah had broken his covenant with God and had to make amends by encouraging humanity to propagate the vine and respect its power. Over time, humans learned to control and domesticate the source of pleasure. Their relationship to the vine became symbiotic. Human interaction with the vine helped to produce a more consistent organism that would in turn produce higher quality fruit in line with the new importance wine held in religious and cultural terms.
As Noah's descendants spread out and continued his work, the more productive economies of these growing communities allowed for expanded farming and new vineyards where the climate and land were more compatible with the domesticated grape, south and west. Biblically speaking, the Bible wine trail led south and west as the repopulation of the place after the flood, and just as important, led to the revival of the ordered life, including man's preeminent position as Yahweh's instrument on earth to effect his work. The grapevine and wine were among the most important instruments to lead to this new type of civilization from a world upended by the chaos resulting from the flood. Noah serves as a prototype of the first wine grower and the first founder of a vineyard, and his location coincides with archaeological findings today. And so what we have, as we kind of break down the growth, we have the developing cultures within Mesopotamia. We have the early Levantine societies, which are the Hittite cultures within Turkey, the Uruk Sumerian cultures to the lower Tigris-Euphrates valleys. We have the Egyptian cultures, which is Nile Delta and then expanded south. Here, within the Egyptian cultures, desert, and even the lower valleys within the Tigris and Euphrates would be like Iraq, Iran. Desert climates mostly bear drinking due to conditions suitable for growing cereal crop. What we saw initially before wine really became prevalent was they were actually beer drinkers, because as societies move south faster than vineyard growth and development could take place, not having the abilities to be able to acquire that stuff within areas where you really couldn't grow them, they move to more of a fermented beer because of the abilities to grow barley and cereals of that nature. And so at that time, it was only the rich and the royalty that were able to afford the cost to have that stuff transported down into their locations. Vineyards in northwest Mesopotamia are described as plantations with thousands of trees. We saw that. They supported the vines. So before we got to what we know today of a vineyard with the nice trellised rows, vineyards were actually large sums of property that were very thick in trees. And the grape vines, the vineyard was allowed to kind of just grow itself right through it. And then they would go through and pick and cultivate the vines and the trees. Later on, as they began to be able to learn better ways to control it, you would start to see like trellised, where they would have like these canopies made. You see them a lot within like drawings of like Egyptian and stuff, where they would allow them to grow up and then across them. And then they would be able, as they grew, to be able to kind of pick the grapes off of them. Also, as they grew the abilities to make larger and larger structures, they would let them grow up the sides of the structures. They would oftentimes build small gardens off of them. And that's where they would kind of have either their own, especially their royalty and the palaces and stuff. They would be able to grow some of their own stuff right there. But obviously it would only produce small quantities. And the Hittites would have shared their knowledge with Babylon and Assyria and would have adopted aspects of the Hittite culture, including appreciation for banquets and a distinctive wines. Hittite culture is obviously going back to where a lot of this propagation and development would have originated. So with that said, we will next week with more specific with Abraham, Isaac, and then Jacob and Joseph and their roots and their discoveries. Yes.
Great presentation. But I have to put a question that one premise two slides ago. Where did that come from? The guy said Noah because of the sin.
Yeah. I'm looking for that, not finding it very well.
Let's see.
You said you broke covenant with God.
I believe
referencing to that, I question specifically when I put that in there, the verbiage of covenant. What I think his referencing to that is his sin of drunkenness, and allowing everything that happened, and not being in control of drinking the wine and stuff. I guess, and you would maybe be able to better answer that, was there specific covenants made with God, or were underlined or understood?
I think it's a common error in a lot of theology to say that.
Who
wrote that? Is this
the No, this one would have been... his name is Joel Butler. He writes a book called Divine Vintage. Yeah. So, any last thoughts on... You definitely feel that that's just way out of the park. There's no...
Well, it's his son that was cursed anyway, not Noah. His son for blabbing around that, oh, gee, Dad's got drunk and we need to...
No, I understand that. Yeah.
Curse wasn't on Noah.
But it doesn't say it was cursed. It just said that it was a broke covenant with God.
There's the Bible. It says the Bible doesn't say that. It's not good.
Yeah.
He wasn't
right.
Necessarily unlawfully drunk. He just took it after the way he did it.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, yeah. Well, I'll definitely have to explore that a little more then and see if I can maybe...
there's another book about
contextually it. See maybe what he's trying to refer to there. Yeah. I don't have that one yet, but yeah. All right, well, on that note, would you be willing to pray? Thank you.
Celebration of feasting, all the joys of our joy of friendships and joy of each other. We thank you for this instruction, and we pray that you will be able to more and more bear your image. We ask your blessing as we go forward to refreshments, fellowship, and then worship. For we pray that
you would just leave it right on this? Okay, no problem.